Fan of the show? Never miss an episode by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at our website, cinemapsychoshow.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Psycho Show.
Take two. Take two. I did it 10 times. Where's the fly? They're eating her! And then they're gonna eat me! Oh my god! Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
I am just sure that my neighbor upstairs is so sick of here.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh my god, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Connington, not joined by my fellow co-hosts and indie filmmakers, John Lane Woolscroft. It's just me for this little intro here. We're in episode 188, and this week, as we are massive fans of B-movie and cult cinema, we have a treat for you all today. We have an interview that John did a few months back with a professional working actor, and I would argue possibly a living meme. We're interviewing Darren Ewing of Troll 2 fame. You're probably familiar with him as the character Arnold in that film, who does the quintessential line in the film, I would say. I mean, there's a lot of lines in that movie that are quotable, but I think his is probably the most viral, and that is the "Oh my God" scene in the film when one of the characters is getting eaten and he has to react to it. So John actually got to interview him a couple months back right as the pandemic started. And Darren actually is a professional working actor. He's done a number of shows for Hallmark as well as a little bit of TV. And he, his most recent credit is actually working for Friends of Ours, which are the company Narrative Films. They did Texas Cotton. And the new movie that'll be coming out hopefully soon is the movie Cyst, which Darren has a role in that. So without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to John. And this is Darren Ewing of Troll 2 and Cyst fame.
Do you like the solar system?
Yeah, it's quite cool, planets and stuff.
So I am here with Darren, but as I start all these things, I don't want to sound like a broken drum. If you've heard this 100 times from me from these interviews before, but I always feel that you could do a much better job of introducing yourself than I could. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, my name is Darren Ewing. I am infamously known as the guy that says, "Oh my God," in Troll 2, which is now it's a meme, apparently, and is all over the country. I'm an actor and a musician. I currently live in Ogden, Utah, and I am still a professional actor and musician. I've been in 12 films. I've been in some television shows, and I am also in the upcoming horror comedy wonderful gore fest known as Cyst, which opens I'm hearing in the fall.
Yeah, that's all I've gotten to. No submitted date, but the fall. So yeah, about Troll 2, like how did that come to be a part of your life? Like you know, how did you hear about it, and what was the audition like for that?
I was new with an agency. I just started with the McCarty Talent Agency, which is that's the agency that cast, I think, all of the parts in Troll 2. They had auditions in a hotel room in Park City, and I walked into the audition. It was one of my very first auditions. I auditioned for Troll 2 and for Halloween 4. At the same time, they were auditioning for Halloween 4 just across the hall. So there were a lot of people waiting in the lobby. When they called me in, the room was, there was Claudia, the director, and the room was filled with these chain smoking Italians, and this is before you couldn't smoke. And it was just, it was a lot of smoke, and I had my sides, and I was so, I was just young and energetic and, you know, full of piss and vinegar. And I went in and, I did a couple of lines, and then Claudio gave me some different sides, which was the Oh My God scene. And he said, do you want to take a few minutes? And, I looked at it and I said, no, I'm ready to go. Cause I was just very enthusiastic about, you know, about doing this and being an actor. So, I did the audition, and this is so funny. When I left the audition, I thought, I nailed it, man, I've got this. And I was just thrilled. They called me a week later and said I was cast, and I was just so excited to be in a movie that I threw all of my enthusiasm behind it. You know, I'm not saying that my performance was very good, but I was genuinely trying to please them, because this is what I've always wanted to do with my life and with my career. So Troll 2 for me, for a lot of actors, they kind of shied away from it. For me, I know a lot of renowned actors who, you know, like George Clooney was in Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Jennifer Aniston was in Leprechaun, Pre-Nose Job. You know, Matthew McConaughey and a lot of people have these cinematic skeletons in their closet, and I'm actually thrilled because I always wanted my first movie to be something that came back to haunt me, and boy, 30 years later, and here we are talking about it. Because of that movie, I've been able to audition, and I've been cast because of my notoriety in that movie. When I met the people with that, they were coming through town with Texas Cotton, and I just knew I wanted to work with them, with Travis and Taylor and the whole gang. And so they asked me to submit a video audition for Cyst. I was sick as a dog, so it kind of works because I end up being very, very sick in the film and turning into a cyst. I don't know if publicity is like, I took a bunch of pictures, and Travis was just like, you can't put those on. Can't give too much away. But
somebody's got to turn into a cyst, right? I mean, the movie's called.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. And I can honestly say that Cyst is probably the most enjoyable time I've ever had on set, working with a crew, working with a group of people. It was, you know, it's a low budget independent, and I love those, and I love to support those. I've been in several Hallmark Channel movies and several Disney movies. I've been in 5 Christmas movies. I'm in the Screen Actors Guild as a in Utah we have a right to work, so I am eligible for SAG work, but this was an independent, and I was just thrilled to be able to do it.
And of course I'm not missing you on
set. Big sets and some little sets, you know, all little roles, things like that. I would love to get onto a television series, you know, a Netflix series, something like that. I've been auditioning. I've had several auditions, 5 in fact, which is way more than I've had since the coronavirus thing happened. So anyway, I'm just babbling. What was the question?
No, you nailed it. But yeah, I was just saying too, like, and of course, like I ended up missing you on set, cause I came right after you had left, which was a bummer for me.
I'm, just, I'm just noticing, you can see, like, my condo is being built. It's all like framework, and you can see my drywall and all of this crap back here. So I don't have a cool background because my apartment is in pieces right now.
Hey, what better time to be working on things, right? You know, but yeah. So what was it like? Just going back a little bit here to Troll 2, what was it like on set? Did you guys? Because I mean, there was a language barrier with the director, obviously, and I spoke with George about this. Was there like a feeling that like? And the thing is, don't get me wrong here. I love Troll 2. I love it to death. But like that, you know, this isn't going to be Citizen Kane while you're shooting it, or is it just working on it and just, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think we all knew that this wasn't Shakespeare in the Park. but for me, my attitude toward it, I never looked down my nose at work, at opportunities. And so it got very exhausting toward the end. And when I was in makeup and I had the thing in my mouth, they picked me up and they screwed my shoes, mind you, my shoes, my Converse high tops. They screwed them into a board and then they stuck my feet in them, laced them up, poured in dirt. And then two guys just picked me up and carried me on set. And they painted, they used rubber cement for my appliances. So they just painted me with rubber cement. And there I stood there for, eventually I almost fainted several times because I was there in the pot for 14 hours. This was a non-union deal. And I tried not to complain, but there was one point where I just said, I'm going to pass out. I'm sorry. I'm getting really dizzy. And they came and they put a stool under me so I could sit. And then catering brought in a shake so that I could, you know, get some sustenance. But toward the end, and we were supposed to film other scenes the next day, but this one went on so long that when they finally said cut, they dumped me out of the pot and they wrapped me and just left me, and I didn't have a car. Deborah, who plays Leonore Gielgud, drove me, and I still had makeup on and I looked terrible and I didn't have any shoes. So Deborah drove me to Mervyn's and I bought new shoes for what I thought would be the next day, and then went home and spent the entire night putting acetone on my legs and arms to try to get the rubber cement off. And then I found out that they were out of time, and so they weren't going to film the remaining scenes with Drew and myself, because we were supposed to be saved at the end of that film when Michael bites into the bologna sandwich. That was supposed to free us from our plant existence, and we all hug, we all hug Michael and live happily ever after. But because they ran out of time or money or whatever, they just put a blender in front of Drew, played by Jason Steadman, one of my dearest and best friends to this day. All of Elliot's boys and George and the cast, we're like a family. Just stay in contact all the time and just love all of them. But Jason just stared at a blender, and people ask, you know, what happened to our characters? And I say, well, I think I ended up in the blender. But when I spoke to Claudio, the director, in 2007 at the Troll 2 Festival, you can believe it. There was a whole Troll 2 festival and screening in Morgan, Utah, where it was filmed. And Claudia says, Darren, you have to do Troll 2 Part 2. And I said, I can't, Claudia. You killed me off. And he got very anime. I said, no, no, no. Arnold does not die in Troll 2. So apparently he's written, well, Rosella, his wife, who wrote Troll 2, has written me into Troll 2 Part 2, but I haven't seen the script and I don't know where that's going. I'm kind of like, if I had the chance to do it, of course, I would not turn my nose up at it. I would love to work with these guys again. I don't know. I don't think just because something catches on or is popular, it necessarily needs a sequel. I don't think Troll 2 Part 2 will be anywhere as just sort of accidentally tragically wonderful as Troll 2 is. Patton Oswalt is a fan of Troll 2, and I was interviewing him at Sundance. I used to cover Sundance for the Salt Lake Tribune, and what he said, it's tragically wonderful, and it's 1,000% enthusiasm for your awfulness. And I think that's a perfect way to describe Troll 2. We were all really trying to do a good job and trying to make a good movie. And Claudio and the Film Mirage production people know how to make movies. I mean, he's still doing it. He's still pumping out films, award-winning films. I just thought, wow, they're an Italian crew. What are they doing in Utah, you know? So I thought, if I do this, this could be a stepstone to other opportunities. And it was, but not in the way that we had thought it would be.
Gotcha. And when do you remember, like, actually seeing this movie? Because I think, like, you know, George has said that, like, there wasn't, like, a premiere, and then one of his patients had brought him in, like, a copy of it, like, 15 years later or 10 years later. When do you remember, like, seeing the film for the first time, and then when do you remember it becoming this humongous, like, cult hit where there's screenings and festivals and things like that?
Yeah. The first time I saw it, well, after it wrapped, I kept my eye out for it, and I had and still have a subscription to Fangoria magazine. And you know, in the 80s, there was that and Cinemagic, and there were a few other kind of dorky film and horror oriented magazines at the time, and I subscribed to all of them because I'm a horror geek and a movie geek, and so I was looking for it. But the working title for Troll 2 was called Goblin. That's why they're called goblins through the whole film. Yeah. My guess is that when MGM acquired the rights to Goblin, they thought it would be better for promotion to call it Troll 2 and bill it as a sequel to the Carl Boucher film Troll with Sonny Bono, and I love that movie too. So I was looking through the magazines and trying to find Goblin. And then in Fangoria magazine, just down in the corner, there was a short review for a film called Troll 2, directed by Drago Floyd, which is Claudio's pseudonym. Hmm. And it was not a good review, but I read it and I immediately went, that's it. That's Goblin. I know that's my movie. So I drove down to Blockbuster with my, let's see, were we married then? No, she was my fiance then. And we drove down to Blockbuster, and I'm not lying, the guy behind the counter was watching Troll 2, because it's, I have it here somewhere, I have the VHS. It's a really compelling cover with this evil troll, and the kid from Jurassic Park is in it, you know, on the VHS cover. And he went, dude, that's you. I'm like, yeah, that's me. I got to rent that. So he popped the tape out, and we took it home, and my whole family got together in my parents' basement to watch it, and we laughed our asses off. It was just, we were just howling with laughter, and you know, the family was joking, well, that's the end of your career, bud, you know. And you know, I love bad movies, and I'm a big fan of MST3K. I actually emailed them and asked them to review it, and they very nicely said, we already reviewed a movie called Hobgoblin, so you know, we're not going to review that. But then later, Riff Tracks did a Troll 2 thing. Yep. And that's when, when I first saw it, I knew, because I love a lot of really bad, corny, campy movies, and this definitely fit the bill, and I knew it would find its audience. I just knew that I wasn't going to be the only one that found this really funny and wonderful, and you know, in a train wreck kind of way. So flash forward, it's the year 2000. I'm working as a web developer and journalist at the Salt Lake Tribune, and I start receiving fan mail at the office at the Tribune. People sending me things that, and I have a few, and like people wanting me to like sign their autographs and stuff. It just started trickling in. And what I think happened is it ended up back in rotation on HBO, the way it does sometimes. And then people went to IMDb and found out that I worked at the Tribune. So they started sending me, fan mail. And that's when I started realizing that, oh, wow, this is something. Okay, I knew it would find an audience. That's cool. And then it just kept getting more and more. More and more response, more and more people seeing it and are curious about it and asking about it. And then in 2006, we were invited by Curtis Quinn and John Gemberling to be in – I love name dropping, by the way. involved in a screening at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. That's the first time I'd ever been to New York, and really didn't know what to expect. I was very nervous because I thought, wow, they're either going to love it or it's going to be a Spinal Tap moment and they're going to tear us apart and this will be crushing and embarrassing and humiliating. And that screening was anything but a disaster. It was serious. And it's in the documentary Best Worst Movie. I don't know if you've seen it, but Best Worst Movie is one of the and not just because I was involved in it. It's very personal to me. And I really think Michael and the gang did an exceptional job with Best Worst Movie. And the damn thing makes me cry because people began to associate with Troll 2 in a very personal way. And people will come in and say, this movie changed my life. And I watch it every day, or I watch it every week, and I've memorized it. And it gives me hope and it gives me joy. And I think that's really awesome. The Troll 2 fans, they were lined up around the block in New York, and they had to turn them away. And it was that way in Austin. It was that way in Los Angeles. It was that way in New York. It was not that way in Europe, but there are clusters of fans in Paris and in England and Budapest, in Hungary. So it really is an international thing. But the fans they're very intelligent, and their enthusiasm is just inspiring to me. I have one friend who he writes to me pretty regularly, and you know, when I'm going through a bad time, he'll say, you know, what can I do? What can I do for you? Because that movie changed my life, and I'm just really taken aback by that. But I own it. I don't shy away from it. I think it's wonderful. I feel very blessed to be a part of it. I just wish I got residuals for it.
But speaking of that, then, like, how do you feel about the catchphrase? You know, if you wanna call it that, is it an honor to do the phrase from the movie, or is it get a little tiring when people want you to do it? Or
never get tired of it? No. And I never get tired of people asking me. What we did a screening in Salt Lake that was sold out at the Tower Theater. And I was there with my wife, and there were these women standing over there, and they were like talking among each other, like, should we go ask him? Like, should we go talk to him? And my wife just went over and said, he's my husband. He loves this shit. Go over. And she's right. I do. I love the attention. I love the enthusiasm. And when people ask me to do the line, and I'll be happy to do it. It's a bonding thing for me. It was never my goal to be known as the world's shittiest actor. That was not the goal. But you know, here we are, and you know, and we're still talking about it. So yeah, I'm okay with the catchphrase. I'll say this in my defense. I defy any actor to take that line and make it good, because I struggled with it. It was I was supposed to be frozen, and apparently I was moving, and I was getting yelled at a lot. They finally used the 10th take, and there was a fly on my head that I didn't know about until I saw the damn thing. But all of the lines were difficult for all of us, but it became apparent very early that we weren't really at liberty to change the wording of the script. So, you know, when I'm running through the woods saying stop I say, I'm supposed to be, you know, a teenager, and so I'm trying to say stop or something like that, just to make it sound more, I guess, American. And it was, you know, when I'd asked to change a line, Claudio would talk with that, and they go, just to say the line, to say the, you know. So I just said the lines as they were written. And that's why they're so kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, like, what were you supposed to do? Like, give that line to Laurence Olivier or Richard Burton, and it's not gonna be anybody. It will sound English, which will make it nice. But
yeah. Under those circumstances, you know, and there were a lot of moments filming where I just thought, are they serious? Like, when I first saw the troll, the goblin costumes, I just thought, are they serious? Like, is this really what it's going to be? And like when the spear is thrown at me, we lost our daylight and weren't able to do it. So I'm doing the scene with the goblins, the other actors. I'm friends with them too. The Gibbs. Yeah. Just got interrupted by a phone call. Okay. And we're back. And I'm doing that scene, and then I say, and remember, and then we lost our daylight, so we couldn't finish it. So we finished the scene when we were at the church set in Porterville, and they just stood me up in front of a pine tree. So if you notice in the film, the background completely changes. And then, you know, it, like, the goblin throws it, and then it's, like, soaring through the air, and then it, like, comes at me with a different setting right here, and that's Claudio on the other end of that spear, and I had a steel plate and some styrofoam and a squib with a tube, and there was the crew down below the shot, squeezing it, and I think Claudio really enjoyed stabbing that thing into me. and then they squeezed it and blood just went everywhere. And my mom was on set that day watching, and she was really upset seeing all that blood coming out of me. She was really, really upset. She didn't like that at all. And then in the movie, they ended up cropping it so you don't see any blood, because I really think Claudio intended this to be a family film. Like Gremlins or something like that. I think that's what he was going for. So it's why all of the blood is green and there isn't a lot of gore in it. And the Oh My God scene, what can I say? I've always wanted to have I'm touching my face. I've got hand sanitizer. I'm good.
I've touched it like 10 times.
And I'm socially distanced. I'm good. Anyway, what was I saying?
About the catchphrase.
The catchphrase has given me that little piece of the culture that I've always wanted. So I love it. Yeah.
So on IMDb, I noticed when I was doing a little research, there's Troll 2 and then a gap, and then you've been working pretty steadily since 2006. Now you had mentioned, that you were working for the paper and everything. Did you kind of step away from acting and get back into it, or was it just, other kind of stuff that just didn't end up on IMDb?
I got married and had kids and was in dad mode. So I still went to auditions and did the smaller parts and just picked up work whenever I was able to do it. But now both of my girls are grown up and ruling the world, and I couldn't be more proud of them. I'm divorced and now I have all the time. So just at the beginning of this year, I decided to pursue acting as a profession. And then COVID-19 hit and all the work went away, and I was going to move to Los Angeles or New York. But that just screwed up everything. And also my parents' health began to decline. They're in a rest home right now. So I felt like, what better time? If I'm ever going to do this, I need to do it now. But now I'm kind of struggling. I'm looking for more work. My band was able to perform last Saturday, but now all future gigs are postponed because of this resurgence in COVID cases. So I'm looking for some work at home. Situations, just something to pay the bills, because I'm famous, but I'm not rich. I'm definitely a day player, a working character actor and musician.
Gotcha. And you had mentioned this a little earlier, but I noticed as well, you have done quite a few Christmas theme movies, like the Hallmark kind of things, How does one get into that gig?
Salt Lake has actually a lot of productions. They do a lot of Disney Channel. They do a lot of Hallmark movies. And I'm also in a Christmas movie with Sony. As to why I'm in 5 and probably I just auditioned for another one, hope I get it, with Hallmark. 5 Christmas movies. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm elf-sized. or what I think it is I think, and you have to know this about yourself when you're an actor, I think I'm very television-friendly. So I do a lot of TV films because I just think my look and my style lends itself to that kind of storytelling. That's just a guess, but yeah, I didn't set out to be in five. The great thing about Christmas films, and I'm also in a couple of thrillers, and I'm in Return to Halloween Town, is that those play every year, so I still get residuals for those. It's the gift that keeps giving. So I'm very happy to do more seasonal films.
Yeah, when with those type of movies too, like obviously if a movie's called Groundhog's Day or Halloween, like they're gonna play every holiday. So yeah, it's having a movie that's holiday themed, like you're guaranteed to probably find it on cable at some point. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And one of them is actually pretty good. So,
and what's so a lot? You know, most I'd say probably 99% of the people that listen to this show, I'm sure there's maybe a few actors out there, but you know, they're not working actors. Like, what is that process like to audition and you know and to try to work consistently in television and movies? Like, just in a nutshell, like what's it like to be a consistent working actor?
Well, I'm trying to work toward that. I really think I'm going to have to move in order to do it full time. And right now I just can't move. I have to stay here in Utah for family and personal reasons. But I do think there's a move. It would be easier to move to Los Angeles, but I don't really want to live in Los Angeles. So I'm looking at New York and possibly Austin because I know a lot of friends that are in the film industry, and Austin seems pretty friendly, and I just love Austin anyway. I've always thought about moving there. I have an agent. But when I move, I'm going to have to find another agent. I also do a lot of just shopping on my own and letting filmmakers like the CIST people, just letting them know that I want to work with them. And you know, when I got CIST, I actually quit my day job. Because I thought that it's time. It's time for me to take this seriously and start doing it professionally. And I got to work with some real professionals, and I got to work with Gene Jones and all of these great people that I admire so much. And it was such a thrill. And when I rapped on that, it was that the day of my rap was the anniversary of. A really, really awful, tragic decision that I made 5 years ago. And so I thought, I just wrapped on a film. I'm alive. I'm well. I'm loved. Let's do this. Let's go. And it's been nothing but encouragement from the people involved with CIST. And a part of the cast lives in Germany, and we still, Ava and I still stay in touch, and she and her husband. So networking is really important. And I also have been going to a lot of Comic-Cons and horror festivals, and I love those. I would pay to get in those anyway, but it's nice to go to those and meet fans and make a little extra money that way. I have a line of trading cards that just got finished through Attic Cards, and those are all signed and sealed and delivered. I'm just trying to use whatever notoriety I have and whatever connections I have and friendships I have to continue to work in this industry. So I haven't been, we've all been sidelined. All of my actor friends, all of my musician friends, all of the below the line people, you know, makeup artists and people who do lighting and special effects. We've all been hit by this, just like my friends in the service industry. So we're finding different ways of getting around and hoping that, you know, this is over soon, because it just can't continue like this. There are too many things that rely on our ability to connect as human beings. So it's really tragic. And an actor friend of mine, Dee Pace, passed away 2 months ago. He was an actor that I loved very much. He's just a wonderful guy. I'm just trying to network and do these kinds of things, do these kinds of interviews. I hope you'll send me a link, because I'm like a shameless self-promotion is no stranger to me. I'm not afraid of it. I will name drop. I'm everybody's pal. So
hey, I'm right there with you. And hey, if you promote it, that's promotion for us. So by all means, promote away.
And I'm doing another interview tomorrow I can't remember who, but I've been doing a lot of these since being quarantined. Yeah, and I finally got on stage last Saturday with my band Dizzy DeSoto. That's Dizzy DeSoto, rocking good times.
Check them out on social media.
Yeah, we got on stage and had a great show. We were very rusty, but the audience was enthusiastic, and it was just great to be able to perform again. That really is my oxygen. I love being on camera. I love sharing stories and sharing my art. And I still struggle with calling myself an artist, but I am. I'm an artist. I love art. I have art all over here, and I'm just a big fan of the arts and music and painting and sculpture, storytelling and podcasting and things like that. And you know, I was talking to a friend just yesterday who asked me to sit in on drums. I've been a drummer for 30 years. I've just been a side man here in Ogden in Salt Lake for about 30 years. She was saying, well, I don't have any talent, you know, I can't sing, or, you know, can't carry a note. I can't do those things. And I said, yes, but you are a fan of those things. Like, you love those things. So do that. I mean, do your thing, you know, whatever you're enthusiastic about, you know, if it's bluegrass music, go in. I mean, this is the reason we live and breathe and create. I'm just getting all philosophical.
No, I love it. Yeah.
I haven't been outside in a long time. but that's definitely my oxygen. And I love, the positive feedback, and I'm okay with the negative feedback, so long as it's constructive, because every little bit, it just goes to making better art, making better things. Just do your thing, you know?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. No. And yeah, thank you for that. Now we kind of talked about, you know, how you had kind of met Travis and Tyler and got involved with Cyst. But what was the experience like when you got to set, and what was it like working with George again?
It was we got off to kind of a bad start showing up on set, because I missed my flight, but Yeah, they asked me to submit an audition, and I was just sick as a dog, and I submitted it. I was staying in an Airbnb in Salt Lake because I was doing a show that night with my band, and I was throwing up and just really sick. But Tyler is just so, he just says, "You got this. Don't worry about it. You got this." He's just so encouraging, and he's just such a solid individual. When I met him in Salt Lake when he was screening Texas Cotton, I was just knocked out with his energy and his talent, and I thought the movie was fantastic. And I just said, "Listen, I like you too much to bullshit you. I really want to work with you. So if something comes up, please keep me in mind because I can drop everything right now. You know, the kids are grown up and I'm divorced, and so I can drop anything for an opportunity." So they told me I got the part, and then I quit my day job, which I don't know. They were frankly a bunch of assholes anyway. So I flew to Baltimore, but I missed my first flight. So I ended up getting there with like 2 hours to catch up on sleep, and I took an Uber to the hotel. And that's when they were there. They were still on set. Yeah. So I went up and caught just a little cat nap, and then transportation took me on set to Cyst and filmed with them for 5 days. And they just knocked my socks off with their because I've been on sets that, like, everybody's pissed off and it's not going well. I was in a movie called Haters, and it was the last day, and I'm just a day player, and everybody, you know, it was cold, and I could see that the shoot had not gone well for them. So I've been on sets that are not, it's just not syncing up for one reason or another. But this was not the case with Cyst. Everybody, and I mean everybody, from Sarah in makeup and sound and special effects, all of them, the DPs, they were all, it's like they were a family. They were all on point. They were all just working in service of this story and making this movie happen. And I really think when the movie comes out, that enthusiasm is going to shine through with it. Because I was just really blown away with them, and I hope I get the chance to work with them again. And if there are any filmmakers out there, I would love to work with you too. This was, you know, I don't need a lot. I don't eat a lot. And these kinds of things, you do them because A, they're a lot of fun. B, you meet a lot of cool people. And C, this is the sort of thing that can lead to more work down the line. So I never go with some of these actors who say, I will never do commercials, or I will never prostitute myself like that. And I'm like, get over yourself, buddy. I mean, put on the chicken suit and cluck like your life depends on it. I've dressed up as Jeffrey, the kid-loving giraffe, for a grand opening of a Toys R Us. I've done that. I got $50, and I'm like, hey, showbiz, good. Yeah. I got paid to act. Good. Yes.
Would you be willing to come to Pittsburgh, just out of curiosity, for a film?
Yeah. All right,
well, we'll talk later.
Yeah. I want to be a working actor. So
Yeah, it was a great set to be on. You know, everybody was a professional and everybody was having a great time. And, you know, Tyler is a natural leader. So I think it's so good that he's focused on directing. And I don't think there's anything that Travis Ayers can't make happen. So, yeah, it's been a blessing to work with them and to work on that movie.
Because there were times, and I won't name names. There was one day when I was getting really pissed off. I was getting really frustrated, but not Taylor. Sorry, Travis, Tyler. I always get their names messed up.
Two T's.
when I was doing the press for it, I got my own character name wrong because I'm elderly. but he was just calm as the ocean. And when a problem arose, he addresses it directly. I've never seen him flustered. I hope I never see him flustered. I'm sure he gets that way sometimes, but you know, I was just like keeping it to myself. And I'm just like, not him. He was just cool, you know, cool as the ocean the whole time, which is what you have to be. It's why I don't direct, because I'm just not cut out for it. when I've done directing, I can do stage direction pretty well. I can direct on stage pretty well, but on camera, I'm just not wired that way.
Oh yeah. But yeah, hopefully, you know, we'll be talking again when that comes out in the fall here. But yeah, I can't thank you enough for coming on and, just shooting the bull with me and telling me amazing stories. But I know that anybody listening to this episode of the podcast, they're going to kill me if I don't ask you to do the line, one time for me.
Moi? Okay. All right. I got to get into character here. Let's see. Oh, geez, can you see all Pringles and crap?
It's making me a little hungry, actually.
I have a camera over here so that you wouldn't see my pathetic bachelor life. Got a cigar for later. But then the phone started going dead, so I had to move it over here. All right. I'm going to get into character. Let's see. They're eating her. And they're good. Okay. Take two. Take two. I did it 10 times. Where's the fly? They're eating her. And then they're going to eat me. Oh my God. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
I am just sure that my neighbor upstairs is so sick of hearing. I'm sure he's just like, what the hell is that guy?
It would be great if he never heard of Troll 2 either. He's like, I got Jeffrey Dahmer down the
Yeah. Gotta go check his freezer.
But thank you so much for that, man. And once again, thank you for taking some time out to talk with me. That was fantastic. So great. Thank you. Yeah, and hopefully we'll be in touch soon when things start coming out here with Cyst, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a real pleasure. Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Bye bye.
Thank you again to Darren Ewing for stopping on the show and giving that amazing interview. Definitely check out his work in Troll 2 as well as some of his other productions, and of course look out for Cyst, which hopefully comes out fairly soon. I'd also say, if you're an indie filmmaker who listens to the show, definitely check out Darren Ewing as an actor. I think he does a fantastic job, and he has definitely a work ethic that I think would benefit any production. So thank you again to Darren for coming on the show, and we look forward to seeing his work. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw our way, you can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.